Welcome back to Sports Day SA. Malcolm Blight and David Wilde for Tyre Power. The big footy final sales on now and also 25% off on selected Kumho tyres. Well, last night we saw open mic with a difference. It was actually Mike Sheehan getting interviewed rather than Mike doing the grilling interviews he's done for a long while. Well over 200 episodes. One of my favourite shows. And it's all come to an end. He sort of explained it to why. I thought it might have been he'd had all the big stars on. It's tougher to get the talent, but he joins us now. Mike, congratulations. It's been a long innings and it's come to an end.
Hi, David. Hi, Malcolm. Yes, it has. And I must say, the day after, I'm comfortable with it. I think the show developed, it's not unfair to say it developed a healthy reputation. It had 11 years, 230 shows. I'm not sure that I could make it any better than it was, and I think there was a risk that it might have just gone downhill a bit.
Was it getting harder? I just mentioned in the opening there to get the talent. You've had some massive names on there. And is it harder to get people on?
I was finding that. I spent, I know before the final show this year, in the 2 weeks prior to that, I reckon I'd contacted 17 people and didn't land one of them.
Gee.
And I thought that, I love the conversation. I love sitting down in front of the people that we have had on there, but I didn't want to spend all of next year spending 2 and 3 days a week just sort of coercing people, almost begging them to come on. So I decided that I was happy with the package and where we'd got it to, and it was a good time to move on.
Now, we'll talk about the show a bit more and all the things that happened, which I thought that last night's was terrific and some highlights. But what are you going to do now, Mike? What's Michael Sheehan going to do with the rest of his life, which we hope goes for a fair bit longer? But what are you going to do? Play some golf and what else?
Well, it's a good question, and I haven't actually addressed that, Blighty, which is probably a bit silly because I've always said to people, you should know where you're jumping to before you jump. but I've got a reasonable menu. I've got golf, as you talked about, which I can't imagine that I'd play more than twice a week tops.
Yep.
Unlike you, twice a week would do me. I've got 4 grandkids and a 5th one coming. I've got a place at Sorrento.
Yes, we know that.
And I've got, you know, a reasonable sort of friendship base that I enjoy having a coffee with and doing a few other things with. So I reckon I'll be okay. I suppose it's probably next winter that I'm more concerned about because I've never had a free winter and you're less inclined to be outdoors because of the climate over in this city. So that'll be suck it and see. But I'm not all that perturbed by it. I think I'll be able to cope.
Now, open mic. I mean, well, this is real reason you're on. I mean, obviously, you're a very good journalist prior to that, and then you got involved in TV with a show called Talking Footy, along with the great Bruce McAvaney and yours truly sitting on it.
And the great Malcolm
Blight. Oh, Michael.
Oh, you said it.
Yeah, thank goodness you said it. That could go up anywhere. But, I mean, it was an interesting move, wasn't it? You actually broke down a door by doing that. There weren't any journos at the time doing what you were about to do with that show. Now, there's lots of them now, but you actually broke the window.
Yep. Well, that's true, yeah. And it was Gary Fenton's baby at Channel 7. And I remember at the time, he just sort of floated this idea. I said this last night. He said Macca would host it. Fenton, hoped to get Malcolm Blight as the coach. And he said, we'll have a journo. And his aim was to get me. And I was genuinely reluctant initially because I think we were much more comfortable in front of typewriters and sitting in press boxes than being on telly. And there's no doubt that we collectively had an inferiority complex that why would people want to listen to a journo who'd never played the game when you've got Blight and Matthews and Walls and these people who came later? Where's our credibility? So Gary was adamant that that was a good balance, and I think you and I agree, Blighty, that it was a good balance to have the broadcaster and the footy expert and a journo who should be presumed to be able to ask the most incisive questions and probably had a broader focus than the football man. I think that's how it played out with you and I. I think you were very happy to focus on the inside-the-fence stuff, which I love, but I also had probably the the broader vision of talking about things that had a political nature.
Yeah, but one of the things that always interests me, and I know we're both sensitive people apparently, and we sort of could turn our we could turn our toes up a little bit occasionally, but I've always, the thing is, the respect that you had in the football world was great. Now, I didn't agree with everything. You're right, of course not. No one's possible. But one of the things, I had a great teacher by the name of Ron Joseph. When I first went to North Melbourne, Ron sort of convinced myself and Patsy to come over and have a crack over there. Ron Joseph, over knowing him over a long period of time, I think was probably the best football knowledge person I'd ever met. Understood the game,
Let me ask you this. You're talking about knowledge of what had gone before in a historical context, or knowledge about how the game was played?
Knowledge about how the game was played, how players played it, how coaches coached it, how to administer it. So there's a guy that really didn't play football, but his knowledge of the whole umbrella of the game called football was the most impressive I've seen, and probably the equal of anyone I've ever met after it. You didn't have to play the game. And so that was my argument, not with you, but with other people when they said, oh, what about Sheehan? I said, well, hang on. Listen to what he says. It actually makes sense. So it's not about what you did. It's about what you're doing.
What you know, too.
Yeah.
That's true. But Malcolm, but the difference is if you're Joe Blow sitting at home and listening to this show and Blight says something and Sheehan says something, 9 out of 10 are going to take Blight's view, right? And I can understand that. But I've also always maintained the game is the same for all of us.
Yeah.
You blokes like you, you just played it better than we did. But I've been on a footy ground when you've had to sit under a ball coming down, where you've had to kick a goal because the match depends on it, whether you decide to go or not go in a contest on a ground level. All those things don't change. They are just played at a better level when you go to the top grade.
I think you said that to Roger Merritt too. We're all entitled to have an opinion on it. That's brave taking him on.
I did.
Hey, have you lost many friends over your career because you were the hard-hitting Herald Sun chief footy writer? And like you say, you got to break stories. There was no internet in those early days, so whatever you broke was on your front lawn when the paper rolled up in the next morning.
Yeah, look, Bloody is probably the best person to answer this. I don't actually think I was hard-hitting. I mean, a lot of people say that, but I thought I was... I like to think I was fair, and I thought there were blokes who took bigger pot shots than I did, because I empathise with the players, and I love the players. They're still my heroes, the blokes who do it out on the field. So I like to think, reluctant to take a big free hit at blokes who are out there doing the job. Is that fair, Blighty, or not?
Yeah, no, I found you fair, except when you wrote it about me and you bagged me, but that was the only time I felt...
what was that about?
No. Sometimes...
You remember that because you are, if I'm sensitive, which I own up to, you are equally sensitive.
Oh, he's worse.
You don't own up to
it. He's worse.
Yeah.
I've noticed that, working with him for a couple of years.
Oh,
no doubt. Hey, we want to look at the best and worst. We'll do that after the break, but... I was really intrigued when you spoke seriously about the toll it took with your family. When you're working as a journo, you work ridiculous hours, and you've got a great body of work, and it takes time. You're away from home a lot, and I thought you're very honest with that. You said you're probably a better grandfather now than perhaps a husband and father at the time.
Yeah.
But it does sound we all try to do things for our family, but it often takes us away from those important times when. Perhaps you could be watching them play.
And David, the simple answer is the news cycle is 24/7. There are not many jobs that are 24/7.
Mm.
But news that doesn't... You can't say, oh, I'll have my news for today at 5 o'clock. I mean, it breaks when it breaks.
Mm.
So if you're a chief footy writer somewhere or the chief of whatever or you're responsible for that sport, you have to be around when the story breaks. You can't just ring up and sort of say, no, leave that. I'll come in tomorrow and write it then. If it happens, you've got to be across it. So I've got some guilt about what I didn't do in the family situation, but I suppose I rationalise it, and I've been helped through this by people sort of saying, well, the family situation wouldn't have been as comfortable as it was if you weren't doing the job you were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good television that. Look, we'll take a break. Mike Sheehan, for energy from an Australian-owned company, switched to Lumo SA today. You can call 131 5866. Want to talk shortly with the best and the worst, and I'll never, ever forget the Mark Jackson interview. It was that bad, you just had to watch it. Time now for Barista Made Sea Coffee Break. Welcome back to Sports Day. SA Mike Sheehan, our guest for Tyre Power, rewarding you more with a $100 FPOS card with four selected Maxxis tyres. Mike, I mentioned the infamous Mark Jackson interview. He was mad, he was crazy, but I couldn't take my eyes off the television. What are your memories of that one?
Yeah, well, that's the one. I was told, they said last night that Warwick Kappa was the highest rating one. Sorry, Blighty, but they said Warwick Kappa. But the one that wherever I go, people want to talk to me about the Mark Jackson episode. And I mean, Sam Newman says to me all the time, he said, I don't know why you're worried about that and why you cringed. He said, it was the best show you did.
Mm.
The commercial value was inestimable in his view. But he and I, hopefully, Sam and I are different. I don't like the confrontational way of my natural style in that program, in that chair, is to converse with people, even if I'm asking them hard questions. It's to have a rational discussion rather than the way the brawl that it turned out to be with Jacko.
Just anyone that hasn't seen Open Mic, you should watch it. It's on Fox. It'll be replayed again, but also it'll probably go on a thing called YouTube or something like that. Mm. So all those platforms.
I thought Jacko wanted to kill him that day.
Yeah, I know.
Serious.
Hey, you know, one of the stories that you told last night was about your journalistic praise, that you had a story where two Brownlow medalists by the name of Kelvin Templeton and Peter Moore were about to join the Melbourne Football Club, and you sat on the story. Now, to get the people listening tonight, you've got to understand that would be like Dustin Martin and Patrick Dangerfield going to North Melbourne.
$1 million, wasn't it?
Where they sit.
That's right.
That's how
exactly
big the story was. That's unbelievable, Mike. I mean, they ended up getting there and didn't do very much about it, but that's how big the story was at the time.
Yeah, well, I did make the point. I think that between hearing of the story in the germ of the story to having it published in the paper was probably 3 weeks. Now, the modern-day journo would sort of say, you're kidding. Mm. You know, you can't sit on a story like that. I didn't actually literally sit on it, but it took that long to piece it together to a point where I thought, yes, we can run with this. But even on the day that we published that story, I thought, this just sounds impossible. You know, you just couldn't think that would happen. And we're talking $1 million in 1982. Now, yeah. I'm not sure what it equates to in today's dollars,
lots,
but it's a lot.
Lot.
And this was, and they were for sale as a package deal. That was the first time I'd ever experienced like that, ever experienced anything that could occur like that. And remarkably, it happened probably 3 months later.
Now, is this going to be in a box set, Mike, like all these things now? You can buy the Open Mic series in a box set for Christmas or New Year or something
well,
like that?
No, I wouldn't do it, Blighty. I mean, and I think I can genuinely say this. I think I'm finished with the idea of having been committed to anything and doing any more work. Right?
Yep.
I don't want to write a book. I've done what I think is the hard yards. If Fox chose to do it, if they rang me and sort of said, "What do you think about a box idea of the best of Open Mic?" I'd sort of say, look, I can't believe you've waited this long to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go to them and sell the idea. It's their property.
Yeah.
I think it's a... I mean, so many people have had the same view about... So even if you pick, say, the best 25 ever of that, it would have to sell, I reckon. We brought a book out once of the... I think it was in the second or third year. Transcripts of interviews.
Yeah,
and that
did.
Sold well.
Yeah.
And you imagine if you had vision and dressed it up like they can do, I think it'd be a winner.
Yeah, and look, you've got hold of every major name. We can't mention them all here now, of course, but there's two that I know, well, there's a few that you couldn't get on, Wayne Carey and Tony Lockett. They just wouldn't just wouldn't do it for you. Two of the biggest names in the game.
Yes, and I wanted Duck to be the last one. I sold the idea to him, and he agreed to it, and I said, look, I said, Wayne, I just want to trawl through your footy career because I love the way you played, you know, and there were two or three games I picked out and he was really surprised at how much I liked them. And I said, we'll have to sort of venture off the football for bits and pieces, but it's not going to be a Royal Commission. I just basically want to talk to you about your footy. And he said yes to that. And then someone got in his ear, I suspect it was Channel 7, and sort of said, look, why do you want to sort of regurgitate all that stuff? Yeah. And you know, I still haven't heard from him. Even though I've twice publicly said that Wayne was just, that I couldn't find him. And I understood if he rang me and sort of said, look, I've had to think about it. I just don't think it's worth it. I would have understood that.
Yeah.
But the Plugger one's different. The Plugger just... Plugger and I had a falling out over his on-field behaviour, and I remember I wrote this story. I knew it was going to have an impact, particularly on him, and then subsequently on me. I said, I'm no longer sure that Tony Lockett's good outweighs his bad. And it was after he ran through Peter Cavan at the SCG. And apparently that tipped him over the edge, and from then on, Sheehan was persona non grata with him. I was never able to get him. I had 20 people, I reckon, over the journey promised me they could get him. 20 couldn't deliver.
What about the grumpy Mick Malthouse? You couldn't get him?
No. And I sometimes I suppose people sort of say, oh, those answers I gave you, they might have thought they were private. But I formally asked Mick by text, because I think I like the idea of sending a text message to someone because they can read it in their own time. They can have a think about what their answer might be. So I said to Mick that I was finishing up this year. I thought it was important that he and I sat down and talked before I left. And Mick's response was he didn't think he could trust me with the questions. Well, gee. I've still got no idea what that means.
You had some heart-rending moments too, Merv Cain, Peter Schwab. I think you mentioned there's so many that it turned into that. What was the one that perhaps got to you the most?
I think it's the Peter Schwab one. And even last night when I saw it again, I was sitting with a couple of my grown-up kids, and we watched that. And to see the pain and the anguish in his face, you know, I'm even talking to you guys about it now, just thinking, talking to a father about losing a five-year-old to cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it was just harrowing. And I mean, there are other ones, like the Merv Cain one you mentioned with his wife and his daughter, and one that I reckon almost started that genre of questioning for me was I had Mark Eustace on. You remember Mark Eustace's body?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he got lost. He was this brilliant junior, played at Essendon, went to Richmond, went to Sydney, and then just got totally lost.
Yeah.
And he ran off the rails. And he was when he was at his lowest, he was keeping a diary of, he was working as a storeman during the night, going home, living alone, had a drug problem, all that sort of stuff. And he read a couple of entries out of his diary. And I can remember, I just couldn't believe that someone that low wasn't destined to do something really drastic.
Yeah.
But he got out of it, and he's come good. But, I mean, I know people say, some people used to sort of say, oh, you're really intrusive, or you push them too hard. But my view is if you ask someone a question courteously, and you know what you're talking about, it's up to them. I mean, if they choose not to answer,
correct,
they can just sort of say, no, I'm not going there, or leave it alone.
Absolutely. Hey, Mike, we're going to have to finish this up. We could talk to you forever, but this is probably the hardest question. I mean, you've asked a lot of hard questions in your life, but this is going to be one that you're going to have to finish this whole thing off with. I want you to name one highlight of your 50 years in this great game that we all love dearly. Your one highlight.
Just one.
Okay. One that I achieved or one that I saw?
Either. Your highlight.
Okay. Well, my favourite game, not necessarily in terms of the exhibition of the skills, but in terms of what it meant to the community, was when the Bulldogs finally won, when they beat Sydney in the grand final. And that was as excited as I've ever been at a game of football.
Oh, good on you.
Probably watching you kick that goal from 95 metres at Princess Park.
It was 97 or 98. It's just between 97 and a half metres. Get it right, Mike. Come on.
Now, I love watching you play, Blighty. In fact, you and I had... There were times we probably weren't enamoured of each other for various reasons that happen when people are in the same arena. But I genuinely love watching you play, and you are a genuine legend of this game.
Yeah, I think you are too, of what you've done, Mike. If you ever get over to Adelaide, come out, Blighty and I will take you out. We've got some great reds over here, as you know. We know you love a decent
David,
bottle of red.
David, you've been promising a great red.
Well, you got to get over. You got to come over. Last time you came over, I gave you a red, remember? We actually met, had a coffee, and I gave it, and I've got plenty at home. So you make the move over when you can get out of Melbourne, that is.
You've been very supportive of me over a long time, and I always enjoy talking to you too.
Great stuff. All the best, and we'll keep in touch.
Thanks, boys.
Mike Sheehan, open mic. He's, put the microphone down after 230-odd episodes and had some of the biggest names we've ever seen. And it's must viewing. That's a good idea to get a box set of all the biggest. Yeah, I mean, you. How long ago were you done? Was it 6-7 years ago?
I think it was 8-9.
Yeah. So, I mean, sort of relive that, can't you? But he was very good.
But a great football person, right? He loved the game.
He's a great bloke.
Yeah.
He does like his wine, a bit like you.
Yeah, no, I played a bit with him at Cerrito Golf Club too. I was a member there.
Swing light?
He's a left-hander, actually.
Is he?
Yeah.
Khaki-hander. The all-new game-changing Kia Sorento has landed. Find out more at kia.com.au. That's it for us tonight. We'll be back doing it all over again tomorrow. But, yeah, great to speak, Mike Sheehan, and I'll see you tomorrow between 6 and 7. Bye for now.
Bye, David.